Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Hour number two on FST, Mike Blewett and Joe Galina. Find me on Twitter at Mike Blewett. Find Joe on Twitter at Joe Galina, G-A-L-L-I-N-A. So, a couple big stories. We're talking NFL right now. We're going to be talking NFL for the next hour. We'll have Emory Hunt up with NFL draft breakdowns in the next segment. And you find him on Twitter at F-Ball Game Plan. He's going to be live with me in studio next Thursday, along with Dane Martinez and a yet-to-be-announced special guest or guest. Not sure it's who's going to be yet, actually. We got a few people out there that we're speaking with. So it's myself, Emery, and Dane live on Thursday night in studio 34 right there in Midtown Manhattan. If you want to come join us, take a look at the fishbowl. Feel free if you're in the area. We are in that 34th and 8th, the Renaissance Hotel, fifth floor. So good times. Joe, you've been there many times. The fishbowl
yes.
feel is kind of fun. And on draft
love
night,
it when
last
people
couple of years,
it's been crazy. Wave to us and stuff.
Yeah. We were filming the mock draft show. I guess about 10 days ago now. And by the way, go to my Twitter feed. You'll see breakdowns of the first 12 picks or so. We'll keep releasing the videos for the rest of the teams that we broke down. But I was with Rich Ciarmanello and Joe Lisi. They did a really nice job of breaking down the players. Look, here's what's hard for me. I'm anchoring the sort of Sunday coverage, and then Joe comes in, obviously, behind me and anchors his show. Fantasy Football Live, but it's hard for me doing all the prep for the NFL shows on Sundays to then, and I was doing multiple shows during the week, and it's hard for me to really dive in on college football. I love college football. It's maybe my first love is college football as a sport. It's really like somewhere between baseball and my first love. I'm talking about baseball and college football were like, that's what I watched growing up. Which is weird for a kid from New York to be that into college football. I just was. And then I went to a school, Boston College, that at the time I was there was really good. Tom Coughlin was the head coach, and we were a very good team. And it amplified my love of college football. Simultaneously, I also love the NFL, and that's just sort of what I cover now. So anyway, I say all this as a setup to say I – don't get a chance to watch as much college football, so I need people like Emery, Joe Lisi, Rich Ciarmanello to fill in the blanks on the specific players. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, and it's the same with me. I mean, I got into watching college football a little bit later in life because my focus was baseball and NFL. Those were my two main loves. But then I started watching some college football, and I love offense. And if you love offense, you're going to love college football, right? Because these teams never take their foot off the pedal. And it's just an exciting, quick-paced game. And like you, you know, we're hosting shows, and we're focused on doing prep work for our NFL-centric shows, so we don't have the opportunity to watch as much college football as we'd like, but it really is a lot of fun once we do sit down. I tend to watch some of those Saturday night – I have some time sometimes to watch the Saturday night games, and those seem to be the marquee games as well.
I usually have the Saturday night game on in the background while I'm prepping for the Sunday show.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get the full Saturday night ESPN or Fox game in as I'm watching. So So, yeah, so we'll have Emery on to talk about this stuff and a couple of NFL stories coming up here in a moment. So the first one, excuse me, man, the first one is that the Raiders sent their scouts home before the draft, fearing leaks. And there were some really interesting stories from other guys that were former NFL organizational guys that now work for the NFL Network. And the assumption is that Gruden and Mayock, Mike Mayock, their new GM, a fellow Boston College alum, I'd be remiss if I didn't add that, and John Gruden, don't know who to trust among the scouts, and, quote, wanted to clear the room. They employ 14 people in their player personnel department, not all of whom are scouts. There are a few guys there that were hired by the previous administration. And Daniel Jeremiah, who does a really good job on the draft, said, when I started scouting in 2003, most teams allowed scouts and coaches to see the draft board. Yet by 2012, most teams only allowed three or four people, the head coach, the GM, the personnel director, and the college personnel director, to have access to the board. This isn't that unusual. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I saw the same tweet, and I was reading how, you know, and you tend to forget, and it's good to refresh your memory, how, like, John Gruden, when he first took over back in September, there was some rift there with between him and the scouting team and other facets of the Raiders organization, because John Gruden kind of, you know, we talk about the Tampa Bay Rays being kind of an innovative team. John Gruden kind of thinks outside the box as well. He obviously, you know, when he came in and traded Khalil Mack, he doesn't really care what you think. He has his own way of doing things, and that's the way it goes. But yeah, I saw the same thing where supposedly, you know, there's been a growing trend where, you know, there's fewer and fewer people that have actual eyes on the draft board. And look, you know, you wonder. It makes you wonder what the Raiders might end up doing. You know, might they trade down and you know, maybe go after? Because there's rumors that they might also be interested in Kyler Murray, right? So maybe they don't want to tip. So it makes you wonder as to exactly what's going on there.
Yeah, and so Gil Brandt also said, we never cleared the room, but sometimes we'd lay traps for scouts we didn't trust. In 1987, we showed our board to a scout with us taking Mike Junkin, a linebacker we didn't like. 2 days later, Cowboys beat writer Jim Dent wrote a story saying we were taking Junkin. Hook, right, line, right. Stinker. So, obviously, that
another
guy
thing,
was fired because they knew he was a leak.
Right, right. And another thing, supposedly, I was reading that the Raiders are thinking about cleaning house with their scouting staff. So, why would...
This has happened recently. By the way,
it already happened. That they
no, not to the Raiders. Okay. I'm saying with other teams. I believe I believe the Colts did this. If not last year, then the year before, the Bills made moves like this post draft. So they just get through the process and then they clean house. What was curious to me that when Gruden took over and got a 10-year, $100 million deal from Mark Davis. It was curious to me that McKenzie was still there, because you don't give somebody that kind of money implying total control over the organization and then keep a GM on that he's not associated with. So they for some reason kept him around and then fired him in December, and really odd time for it. It meant that he had lost all power and it was just time to go. I just don't know why they didn't do that during the summer.
Right, it would make more sense.
So now... And any holdovers that McKenzie has, if you don't trust those guys, just they're going to move on. I mean, you know, the draft's going to be over 2 weeks from a week from tomorrow, the draft will be over, and then you'll see moves like this. They don't be surprised if it says something to the effect of Raiders let go entire scouting staff, or Raiders let go seven of their scouts because they were holdovers from the previous administration. So they have their three first-round picks, 4, 24, and 27. They also have a third pick in the second round, so they have four of the first 35 picks in this draft. I think everything is on the table for them. I think at some point they have to start adding impact players, and if they stayed put and took all of those picks, the first – 34, the first 35, I think they'd see some real impact players. If they wanted to move one of those and give up some later picks in order to get a guy that they really are in love with, and they only had three first-round picks, you know, we'll see. I could just envision a scenario where, and I did this in our mock draft, we didn't do trades or anything like that, but I had the Raiders taking Drew Lock because in our draft he kept falling. I'm not a huge Derek Carr guy. There's obviously some money committed there, but I haven't thought for some time that Derek Carr is going to make it to Vegas as their starting quarterback. So I could see them having a developmental year for a rookie and moving on from Carr in the offseason next year. I could see that. I'll check the money to see how reasonable that is, but I remember looking at it in the past and thinking that that's a possibility for them. So we'll go to Derek Carr. And give me your thoughts while I'm looking this up. Give me your thoughts on Derek Carr.
Disappointing. I've owned him in fantasy, and it looked like early in his career that he was going to develop into, you know, something special. You know, maybe not, Aaron Rodgers special. But part of it, I think, as well, is just has been his surrounding cast. And in my opinion, not only do you need, you know, to have physical ability, but, you need the supporting cast, and it could work on you mentally. You know, if you start getting used to losing and, it wears on you. It is interesting to note the difference in production in Amari Cooper once he got away from Derek Carr. I agree with you. I could see the Raiders, getting a quarterback in this draft. Obviously, they need to focus on the offensive line as well. Was ranked fifth worst by our friends at Pro Football Focus. I mean, yeah, running back.
They have a lot of needs, right? Joe.
A lot of needs.
They had 13 sacks last year. The Giants were second worst in the league with 30. The Raiders had 13, less than one sack per game. Mm-hmm. That's almost impossible to do. So they desperately need a pass rusher. The way things are starting to shape out now, if Ed Oliver gets snagged by the Jets or someone else at 3, then Josh Allen is there. Maybe they like Josh Allen as the edge rusher instead of Quinnen Williams. So that is a possibility that is opening up now. For a long time, those top 5 picks seem somewhat locked in. I like the fact that Ed Oliver is up there. I've thought for some time that if he dropped in later into the top 10 or outside the top 10, that someone's going to get a steal. It did happen in our mock draft where somebody got a steal. I think I made a mistake, frankly. If I were the Lions, I'd probably take Ed Oliver. I took an offensive lineman for them, which is a good addition for them, but maybe Ed Oliver would be more of an impact player. The Derek Carr salary situation, can't cut him now, obviously. Would have to hang on to him for a year. They can cut him next year for only $7.5 million in dead money. That's not chump change, but it's doable. Considering the size of the salary cap now, you can get out of that. And by the way, if somebody's looking for a bridge quarterback, maybe you trade him for a third rounder, they take on the salary, and then he's effectively on a one-year deal for 2020. He is signed through 2022, but after that, the dead money, if somebody were to take him on for the 2020 season, the dead money in 2021 is only $2.5 million. At that point, you're willing to do it to get out from a bad quarterback situation. Derek Carr, I think, is going to be a bridge quarterback for somebody at some point. Now, he has every opportunity to prove me wrong. Maybe I don't know what the Raiders are thinking. It's just what I've thought for some time. And I think he's there. This is his last year with Oakland, and then they'll move on from him. So, I could be wrong. We shall see. I'll ask Emery about that as well. The Jaguars. This is such an, Tom Coughlin is obviously involved in this kind of stuff because he's so old school. And I have a ton of respect for Tom Coughlin. As I said, he was the coach at BC while I was there. I've clearly tracked his whole career and frankly rooted for him as old school as he is. But for these teams, after this stuff has all been negotiated, to criticize the players for not showing up for the voluntary workouts, it's a huge slap in the face to the players, to the CBA, to the Players Association, and everything else. And Coughlin didn't name anybody, but Talvin Smith and Jalen Ramsey were not there. Jalen Ramsey has a young daughter and a wife that he's hanging with during the offseason, not showing up to this voluntary workout. And it seems like Coughlin has been critical of these two players, despite not naming them. He thinks everybody should be all in. I don't think it doesn't mean that you're out if you're not at the voluntary workout.
I get your point, but when you look at this team in general, with Leonard Fournette, not being, we'll say, for lack of a better description, not a good citizen, some discipline issues with the entire team. Maybe he just feels that he's old school. Let's face it. Remember with the Giants where he would find
he's the most old
players
school.
Yeah.
He's 70 years old, Joe.
Yeah. But to his credit, even with the Giants, he did change. Like when he had that rule where you had to get to their team meetings 15 minutes before he actually called for the start of it, and he'd fine you if you weren't. He kind of changes.
Rule.
So maybe, yeah, exactly.
Almost like he's 72, by the way.
Yeah. But I get your point, but like I said, I mean, this team is kind of, not played up to their expectations. And part of it has been, I think, their discipline. So
they were horrible last year. Were horrible last year. The quarterback play was atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
Atrocious. And the defense gave up at times. I think that team was just Jalen Ramsey was outspoken about it. He's like, look, I'm not calling people out, but it's obvious what the problem is here. The defense was pissed at the offense because they couldn't do anything. So it put them in bad spots, and and no matter how talented a defense is, if you're in bad spots all the time and you're playing a negative field
bad
position scenario,
if you're
lot,
on the field all the time too,
that's right. That's right. So my point is that you're fair to make a point about Fournette being a bad citizen and getting suspended and all this kind of nonsense, but Jalen Ramsey isn't that guy. He's a loudmouth, but he plays with a chip on his shoulder, and he's a loudmouth. So, I mean, try to dominate him. He's one of the best corners in football. So I think it's unfair to criticize. Then don't make them voluntary. If he's not there for a mandatory workout, criticize him all you want.
Right.
For two players of the entire team to miss voluntary workouts and call those guys out, I don't know. I see your side, and I see their side, but don't negotiate the CBA that way, then. Mm. Or don't have voluntary workouts. What are you going to say? Make them all mandatory. You can't criticize the guys for not showing up when they don't have to be there. All right. We've got Emory Hunt after this to talk NFL draft. I'll get off my soapbox. We'll be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
We're back. Good jam from Sean Engel right there. Sean Engel producing today. Great music as always. We've got Emory Hunt coming on here to talk a little NFL draft. Emory, you are here, man. So thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Excited for next Thursday, me, you, and Dane?
Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. You excited for next Thursday, me, you, and Dane, live in studio?
Absolutely, man. It's almost a... almost that time, and I'm kind of glad for it to be over with, to be honest.
Yeah, you're breaking down hundreds of players. I would imagine why you'd be exhausted. So I'm going to give you a couple of questions right off the bat. You're a former football player, played at University of Louisiana Lafayette. Go Raging Cajuns, right?
Right.
So voluntary workout for Jalen Ramsey and Talvin Smith. They both no-show. Everybody else is there. But Coughlin I don't think he named them by name, but he effectively called them out for not being there. There's an implication that they're not dedicated because they're not at a voluntary workout. I'm defending them, saying it's voluntary. It's in the CBA. They don't have to be there. It doesn't mean that they're not dedicated football players, especially those two guys. What are your thoughts on that?
I learned right away in college that voluntary didn't mean voluntary.
Right.
I'm a true freshman. It's summer workout, so it's 2 days, and you know, practice. You know, you practice in the morning, you're in film study all afternoon, mid morning, afternoon. Then you have workouts, then you have the second practice. So when there's all the, you know, workouts at that point was voluntary. I was like, all right, cool. I could, you know, I'll probably just take this one off and just go rest in the locker room, like take a nap in the locker room. And so I didn't go to this was like the first week, so I didn't go to a workout. And the strength coach came in there and was like, what are you doing? Screaming. And I'm like, man, it's voluntary. You said, you know, so I'm kind of tired trying to catch up. And so, you was ostracized at first because it's like, oh, wow. So now from that point on, everything that was voluntary, I just went, like, you know, because I knew, like, dang, if it was voluntary, it didn't mean voluntary. And even our coach joked on, this was the first week of, like, because in Louisiana, we start early. You know, we start in August. So we're in school for about a good 2.5 weeks before Labor Day. And so here's our chance to get a break because, you know, Labor Day is going to be a holiday. And coach was get everybody up. It was like, you know, guys, you know, we got Labor Day coming up, but, you know, and you got all from school. But guess what labor means? Work. So we're going to have practice that day. I'm like, hey, you got to be kidding. So I just automatically assumed anything that was football related, you had to go. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's just, you know, with guys that are now veterans, for them to take a voluntary weekend off, to your point, I guess the assumption is that it ain't voluntary, but it's what was negotiated in the CBA, so I'm not going to hammer those guys for missing it. Now, second rapid-fire thing, the Raiders and the scouting situation, sending the scouts home, they're worried about leaks in the building. It sort of does make sense to me, and I think you'll probably see a story the day after the draft is over that the Raiders have released some scouts from their services, pink slipped them. But I don't think it's terribly unusual based on the other things that I've read, but it does give you some sense that there's still some holdovers from the Reggie McKenzie era that probably are going to be out of a job soon.
Yeah, this seems like it's par for the course for scouts. You always hear about it right after the draft. You know, they'll let the guys set up the board and, you know, grade the guys that they've been working on all year. And then right after that, they go ahead on and, you know, make the moves and bring in their own guys. And this, you know, it's understandable, it's par for the course. But I think people are making a big deal of it now because of who it is and who's doing the cuts and changes. So, to me, it's much ado about nothing because we've seen this happen year in, year out. It's just that it's because it's the Raiders, it's because it's John Gruden, it's because it's a new GM like Mayock that everyone is going to make a big deal out of it, but really it's something that happens at this time each and every year.
So, Emery, thanks for coming on. And sticking with the Raiders, you know, Mike and I were just talking about Derek Carr. What's your gut feeling about what the Raiders are going to do in terms of addressing the quarterback position in this draft? I mean, do you think that Derek Carr's days are numbered? who do you think that the Raiders might target in this draft if they are looking for their quarterback of the future? You think they might maybe address that in this draft?
You know, I don't think Derek Carr is that big of an issue for the Raiders, to be honest. And I think when people talk about, you know, the Raiders probably taking a quarterback with one of their three picks or even in day two, when was the last time we saw John Gruden operate with a rookie quarterback or have the patience to deal with a young rookie quarterback? Every quarterback he had in Tampa and in Oakland was an older veteran. And even when he got a young guy in Chris Sims, he hammered him so hard, he was yanking him every other game, every other series. To go to a veteran. So I don't think Gruden doesn't even have the patience for a rookie quarterback. So I think if anything, he's probably going to, if he's going to move Carr, it's going to be for an older veteran. So I just think that probably is the biggest smokescreen of the most identifiable smoke screen of the whole draft process and people putting a quarterback with the Raiders without really addressing that John Gruden pretty much hates the rookie quarterback.
It's a good point. I do think this gives him a cushion year where Carr could be on the team for this year and he could take a guy for, you know, he could take a Daniel Jones or a Drew Lock if they fall a little bit later down to him with one of those top 35 picks. But, you know, a guy we've talked about a whole bunch, and again, this is Emory Hunt. You can find him on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. You'll see him live on air with me next Thursday. For our coverage of the first round of the NFL draft, along with Dane Martinez, our man spitting speed. So Ed Oliver was a guy we've talked about through the draft, and Emory, you and I probably talked about it on here 2 months ago. We thought that teams would come to their senses, and it seems like mock drafts are finally moving him into that top 10, even all the way up to the Jets at number three. Do you think he's worthy of a top three pick?
I think so, and I made this point on a show I was on yesterday evening, you know, because they asked the question whether or not you would go interior pass rusher or interior D lineman or out, you know, exterior, you know, edge rusher. I'm thinking, well, you know, the closer you are to the ball, the more impact you have on a game, and that's guard, center guard, D tackle, Mike backer, quarterback, running back. So with that being the backdrop, you look at Ed Oliver, you look at Quinnen Williams. Those two guys, and we've seen how disruptive, when he was at his best prior to the injury, how disruptive Geno Atkins was of the Bengals, and now how disruptive a guy like Aaron Donald can be on your defense. When you have someone that's that explosive off the ball like Ed Oliver, that's so quick to get into the backfield and so versatile, it really throws off not only your blocking assignments, your protections, but also your run blocking assignments as well. So one of the worst things a quarterback can face is quick interior pressure. And it's also one of the worst things a running back can see, too, when you see your guard get whipped pretty quickly by a defensive tackle and he's in the backfield. If it's an edge rush guy, you know you have an ability to, you know, at least make him miss because of where you are on the field and where he is and how, you know, how far he has to get to you. Well, even if it's only like a yard and a half, you know that's enough room to make that guy miss. But a defensive tackle that gets into the backfield quickly throws off everything. So I can understand if a team like Arizona maybe took Quinnen Williams or Ed Oliver over a guy like Nick Bosa or Rashawn Gary or Josh Allen because of what we're seeing now more so in the NFL with those defensive tackles. Even going back a few years with Warren Sapp, that's what made him special, how quickly he can get into the backfield. And you don't have to be quick. You can be strong and brute force, like an Ndamukong Suh. Those guys, if you're able to, you know, exploit the interior defense quickly, whether it's with strength or speed, you're going to be highly valuable in the NFL.
So, Emory, the first round, plenty of great defensive players. If teams are looking to upgrade at their offensive line, plenty of players that they could focus on. Turn our attention to running backs. Who do you think – what teams do you think has the most need for one? Like, is it going to be the Bills? Do you think the Jags look to maybe move on from Leonard Fournette? You know, they look to see what's been going on with him. And I know based on previous appearances, you like Darrell Henderson, if I'm not mistaken, and Josh Jacobs, probably one of the first running backs to go off, you know, be drafted. Any other guys that we should be looking for?
Dexter Williams is another one out of Notre Dame. I don't think a lot of people are talking enough about him because of what he's at the table. He has the same elements of a Darrell Henderson, the explosive element to hit the home run. And you know, you look at a couple of teams that could fit that mold. Houston could use a starting tailback. Lamar Miller is a good player, but Lamar Miller sometimes can go non-existent in within a game. And also has those nagging injury issues. So I would say Houston could be in a market for one. You mentioned Jacksonville. I think they're in the market for RB2, which could probably be tailor-made for a guy like Dexter Williams or even a Josh Jacobs, to be honest. You know, I think Jacobs would be best in a tandem role as opposed to being a lead dog. You could also make a case for Detroit. I know they drafted a guy last year, but to me, you know, he had injury concerns in college, and he missed some time as a rookie, with injury. So I would say Detroit could be in the market for one as well. Buffalo is a good option because they have two veteran guys on the, you know, on the downside of their career. Although they're really good backs and future Hall of Famers, they're 30 plus. So I think Buffalo could be in the market as well. So those are some teams I think right off the top of my head that can be in the market for tailbacks pretty early, including the Philadelphia Eagles.
So a couple of guys that I'm sure we'll talk about on Thursday, but may not get drafted on Thursday in that first round that I wanted to talk about. I'm just curious if you think that these guys will creep into the first round. I'm just going to throw out a couple of offensive players here. Irv Smith, tight end from Bama. N'Keal Harry. Miles Sanders. Paris Campbell. I'll give you one more. Jay Sternberger. Those types of guys, any of those guys first rounders to you?
I think the two receivers in Campbell and Harry could potentially be first rounders. I think they're first rounders. If I had a need for a receiver, I would take Paris Campbell and also N'Keal Harry in round one. I think Baltimore would be a good spot for either one of those guys. If you look at Kansas City, maybe they don't go receiver early. But you know, in the second round, I think the good receiver and a guy like Paris Campbell in that offense would be ideal. You also look at Indianapolis could be a spot for a receiver. Houston could be a spot for a receiver because of Will Fuller's injury history. So there are some teams in there that could be could be ideal landing spots. Buffalo could be a spot for a playmaker receiver if they trade down, if they don't want to take a receiver that high. The Raiders could be an option. So I think you may see the two receivers go in round one. And I like that you brought up Jay Sternberger because, to me, if you're looking for a guy that fits today's NFL as far as a route runner and what he can do after the catch, he's kind of like Noah Fant in that regard. And we know how guys are infatuated with the tight end position that can also serve as a pseudo receiver. So it all depends on how high Fant and Hockenson go, if they both go in round one, because that may start the run on the tight end position, which could also drag up Irv Smith, like you mentioned, and also Jay Sternberger.
So you got Sternberger, real quick, Joe, sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
And J.J. Arcega-Whiteside are two guys that seem like they're just going to fall into round two and feel like you'd almost be better waiting for one of those guys than maybe taking somebody like D.K. Metcalf, who's obviously really impressive physically, but didn't produce. And Arcega-Whiteside is like the Chris Carter of college football. All he does is catch touchdowns. Like, productive guys like that may be much better value in round two than reaching and getting somebody in round one.
Well, that's why if you're a team like Baltimore that has a serious deficiency at the receiver position and you want to help build around your young franchise quarterback, Lamar Jackson, you probably want to find a way to trade back into round two because they don't have a second round pick. They have a third round pick and a first, and try to get a guy like a J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in round two to couple with a guy you just chose in round one, whether that's D.J. Metcalf or N'Keal Harry. You get those two guys along with what they did last year with the tight end position, and now your offense is ready to go, you know, on the perimeter, on the interior, and we know what they have in the backfield with Mark Ingram, and if they're able to add a complimentary back with some speed to Mark Ingram, I think that right there could also be a recipe for success and have their offense rival what the Browns have put together on paper this offseason.
So Dolphins need to fill, obviously, a lot of holes on their team. Put yourself in their place. I mean, what do you do with this 13th pick? Do you trade it so that you just accumulate as many picks as possible? And if so, like, what do you focus on? Like, is it defense that you build this team around? Or, I mean, it's a fairly weak quarterback class. What do you do here?
If I'm Brian Flores and I just watched one of my closest friends and Steve Wilkes get fired in one season because of inadequate quarterback play, and people talk about, oh, well, the Dolphins can tank for Tua, I'm not going into the season with Ryan Fitzpatrick as my quarterback because I just seen my friend get fired after 1 year of being, you know, a bad team because his quarterback wasn't adequate despite having Larry Fitzgerald, Christian Kirk, David Johnson, all these good players around it. They say they didn't have weapons. So I would be hard-pressed to see them not take a quarterback at 13. I don't care what people believe about Ryan Fitzpatrick and how much they love his press conferences and how open and honest he is about being overweight and eating cake and not working out in the offseason. If that was any other quarterback, he would be up in arms. Imagine if Cam Newton had that same issue, or imagine if any other quarterback had agreed to be like, oh, yeah, I'm just chilling, I'm cake. So I think that's a spot where we may see a quarterback like Drew Lock get taken off the board, or if the Giants do the dumb thing and don't take Dwayne Haskins at six, that's the spot where I believe Haskins can go, because I would be hard-pressed to see them go into a season with a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, knowing a guy that just got fired in his first year with the rookie quarterback that they took in the first round.
Agreed. I just think they need so many players. I could see them trading back for multiple picks and taking a QB and somebody else, maybe getting a couple of first-round picks. All right, we're going to break, but I'm going to give you 5 seconds to name one guy that we haven't talked about at all for these last 2 months that you love.
Jerry Tillery out of Notre Dame, defensive tackle.
I think love it. Love it. Great job. All right, Emery, I'm going to see you in a few days, buddy. We'll talk off air in these next couple of days. So that's Emery Hunt, F-Ball Game Plan. You'll see him soon on Thursday night, and we'll be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99, or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
I don't know what this world is coming to.
We're back on FNTSY. Good stuff from Emery, right? You said.
Always.
Consummate pro. He's always the owner of Football Game Plan. You can find him on Twitter at F-Ball Game Plan. So that was Emery Hunt. We'll get that interview out for those of you that want to listen to some of his breakdown on some of those players. So, you know, we spend so much time talking about the first round. I like to get into the deeper rounds and some of the guys that, you know, maybe we don't get a chance to talk about. But people are infatuated with the first round, but really those second and third and fourth rounds end up being really important too. Obviously, you can churn out some of the end of those drafts year over year. But, you know, talking about guys like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, I think is that type of player where, first of all, he ran under a 4.5, so he isn't slow. He didn't run a 4.31, but we see this every year. Like, people get infatuated with the guy that ran the fastest, but he's not the best player. He very rarely is the best player. So Paris Campbell has incredible speed and seems like he'll be productive, and Andy and Isabella has incredible speed and is not a first round pick, but is a guy that just fits the NFL very nicely. Now, JJ Arcega-Whiteside could be that solid possession receiver and a guy that wins one-on-one battles for a long period of time.
Right,
Emery kept bringing up the Ravens. They are a team in desperate need of an option on the outside, and somebody like Arcega-Whiteside in the second round could solve that for them.
Yeah, and that's one of his strong points is winning contested balls, right? And that's, and like you mentioned, the Ravens need to build around Lamar Jackson, got to get him some targets. And you mentioned Paris Campbell with the speed. Just from what I've read, he just needs to work on his route running skills a little bit more. But, can't always go with the speedy guys, right? Remember John Ross.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I thought John Ross was a terrible pick the second that they did it. You don't take an oft-injured guy with a number 9 pick when the roster was clearly had much bigger needs than that. They didn't need a guy opposite A.J. Green to fix the team. The team was falling apart around them. Their offensive line was awful. They are aging defensively, and there were many other needs that they had than taking John Ross and ended up being a complete bust. It's sad that he's injured as much as he is, but it isn't what they needed at the time. So, you know, they're going into this season with Willie Snead, Jordan Lasley, Chris Moore, Quincy Adebayo. That's it right now.
They're obviously going to try to win by running the ball. They have a very talented offensive line. Ronnie Stanley and Orlando Brown at tackle. Marshall Yanada at guard. Alex Lewis at guard. Lamar Jackson ran the ball too much. They can't have him doing that. They added Mark Ingram along with Gus Edwards, Kenny Dixon there. They ran the ball more than any other team in the league, particularly in the back half of the year, but it wasn't that effective. They won a bunch of games, yes, but it wasn't transformative enough in order for them to get a playoff win. We should see some natural progression out of Lamar Jackson, but they're going to have to figure out a way to be at least somewhat of a dual threat offense. Even though they probably will run the ball more than every other team this year, but they can't go into the season with those receiving options. It's just they added Seth Roberts as like a back of the roster wide receiver, but they're going to have to address it. Doesn't have to be the first round, but at some point they're going to have to do it.
Yep, they have other things to address too. They lost. They got to make up. The sacks that they lost with Terrell Suggs and Za'Darius Smith. I mean,
CJ
they
Mosley.
Lost, what, C.J. Mosley as well. But you're right. I mean, maybe it's a tight end in the second round would make sense for them, too, like a pass-catching tight end who could also block since they're going to be running the ball a lot.
Possible. I think it would be later, though, because they spent some draft capital. They spent some draft capital on tight end last year. Early in the draft, so I think that probably won't be the way they'll go. I think it could be a receiver, but again, we just listed off a few guys that they lost. You know, Eric Weddle and Za'Darius Smith and C.J. Mosley and Terrell Suggs were all on the team last year. I thought the Ravens were going to be worse last year because the defense was getting old. They have to get the defense younger, and they obviously have turned it over now. Is it talented enough now? Remains to be seen. They did add Earl Thomas. Now, that's not youth, but that's talent. Mm-hmm. Can he avoid the injury bug this year? He hasn't the last two seasons. They've got Marlon Humphrey there, Brandon Carr, Matt Judon, Tim Williams should get some more snaps there defensively. So I think they're pretty good. There are some holes there. They need maybe a top-flight young defensive talent and then a receiver as well. Offensive line, running game should be pretty good, though. But are they going to be loaded up? Is the box going to be loaded up, daring teams to have Lamar Jackson throw it? That remains to be seen. So, all right. So how are you feeling now as a Giants fan? Where do you think that they're at right now? Do you think they're at quarterback? Gettleman had some comments.
Yeah, he's not going to force it.
Yeah. Saying we're not going to pick for need. We have to take the best player available. And honestly, that's just nonsense talk, that because you could say the exact opposite and people would be like, yeah, I like it. Yeah, we should draft for need. You know what I mean? If he came out there and said, we have to draft for the needs of this football team, even if it means passing on a slightly better player, some people would be like, well, that's dumb. And others would be like, yeah, I like it. We have holes at, we have holes on the defensive line now, and we need better linebackers, so we should go for that. People would be okay with it. So saying something like that, just placating. It's just, whatever. That's fluff.
It almost sounds like you don't know what you're doing. Like you don't have a plan. Like it almost sounds like, hey.
They don't have a plan.
Whatever falls to right, where they've shown that, right? But it almost sounds like, whatever falls to us, then we'll make a decision.
Yeah. I'm seeing Chad Reuter.
But hopefully
Chad Reuter, the NFL draft analyst, now has he got crazy in this first round. He did a bunch of trades. He has the Giants taking Daniel Jones at 5.
Wow.
That would be crazy.
That seems a little seems a little early, no? What do you think?
It does seem early.
I mean, I could see them eventually ending up with him. You know, we talked about the Manning, at pick number 5, I think maybe you're probably better off going after somebody that could rush quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Giants.
I mean, they lost Olivier.
The
yeah.
I think the Giants.
Oh, you think they're
going to
trade? Yeah.
I think they could be. So, yeah, he actually has the Giants trading up 2-5. With the Buccaneers to take him. He actually has the Jets in this draft. This is Chad Reuters. He did a 7-round draft. So he went really crazy. He has Kyler Murray number one. He has the Raiders trading up with the 49ers to take Drew Locke at QB. Then he has the Jets getting Nick Bosa. If the Jets stay there and get Nick Bosa, wow, would that be a home run? I don't think that's happening. I think if the Niners don't take Bosa, somebody else is going to take him there. I don't think the Raiders would trade up to grab Drew Locke like that. I think that would be a panic move. Sort of like what the Bears did with Trubisky, but you know, the Bears made themselves a playoff team with Mitch Trubisky and a couple of other moves, obviously. But
and I love Emery's point, too, about Gruden not really traditionally loving, rookie quarterbacks. I mean, I guess you could have a rookie quarterback, on the team and keep Derek Carr temper,
Yeah, I think Emery and I disagree slightly on it. I think he makes a really good point that Gruden does like to work with veterans. And I think he gets very frustrated with rookies. But I've set up the scenario that Carr would be the quarterback this year. And then he can work with a guy that he and Mayock like. They just they don't have to get rid of Carr. I'm just not in love with Carr. And I think they want to make a change as they go to Vegas. I think it just sort of makes sense historically. It doesn't mean they have to get rid of him. He's locked up for years. And honestly, if he plays well this year, they don't have to get rid of him. Because then he's just at a standard salary for quarterbacks. And, he's dropping year over year with where he's ranked. Right now, he's still in the top seven or so of QB salaries. By next year, he'll be outside the top 10. You know, it's the way these quarterback contracts work. It's just right now, Russell Wilson's the highest paid. And by next offseason, he won't be. And then he'll keep moving down.
He'll
move all the way down. By the time... He was like the 17th highest paid quarterback before he got this deal. When he signed his original deal, this previous deal, he was second behind only Aaron Rodgers. So he moved all the way down the list because guys kept getting paid, and Matt Stafford and Matt Ryan and all these guys keep getting contracts, and you move down. It's just, the saying that he's the highest paid quarterback in history. Like, okay, for another 6 weeks, until Andrew Luck gets another extension.
That's quick. So, excellent point.
So that's where we're at. So other draft stuff, you start looking at some of those guys that are a little bit further down the list and names that you hear. I'm just going to pick some guys out of a hat here because we can talk about basically anybody. But from an offensive standpoint, I think the Irv Smith thing that we touched on in the previous segment is interesting because these two Iowa tight ends – it seems to me like Hockenson is definitely going to be the first one picked, and that Fant or Smith could be second. Fant is really more of a receiver. He's not so much the dual threat guy, but a receiving tight end is extremely valuable in today's NFL.
Yeah, and you know what all week I thought of? I thought of when Emery told us last week, when's the last time that you felt that a team was just one tight end away from, taking that next step forward? But at the same point, you bring up some great points in terms of, I think Hockenson is probably the closest to an all-around, tight end in terms of being able to catch the ball and blocking ability. And, Fant, I think, like you mentioned, more of he needs to work on his improve his blocking skills. But Irv Smith, reading up on him, seven touchdowns last year, 44 catches, mixed grades when it comes to his blocking skills. But it seems like he has upside where they can improve. And just traditionally, it just seems that it takes a tight end a year or two to adjust the plane in the NFL. So
but Alabama Irv Smith scores a million touchdowns too, Joe. Like, course he's going to get seven touchdowns. He's the starting tight end on the best team and the second best team in the country. The team that blew everybody out until they started playing really good teams. And they lost.
Right.
And they nearly lost to Georgia, and then they lost to Clemson. So, he better have seven touchdowns if he's on Alabama. So, I think what's going to be funny about this first round of the draft the other night is – it isn't going to explode with fantasy talent, I don't think.
Right.
Because you're going to have – the draft is going to be at least 50% defense. So for those of you that play in IDP leagues, you know, you're going to want to see where Josh Allen and Nick Bosa is going. Nick Bosa is going to be the guy that you're going to want. He's going to be productive because he's going to be able to acquire tackles and sacks. As far as the linebackers are concerned, it seems consensus that there's going to be two traditional linebackers in Devin White and Devin Bush. That'll be three down linebackers. You'll have other guys that may be slotted in at linebacker in your various IDP leagues, like a Brian Burns, who's more of an edge rusher. That gets difficult. Like the IDP Dynasty League that I play in, those pass rushing linebackers have value only if they're elite, like one of the top guys, like a Von Miller. Or Jadeveon Clowney. Like Jadeveon Clowney is a linebacker in our IDP league, even though he really plays defensive end. You know, it's just my fantasy league takes a look at, I think it's according to Pro Football Focus, how guys line up, what position they technically line up in, and then they grade them accordingly. So there are times where players move positions from year over year based on how many snaps they took at what position. Like Aaron Donald, I think, got moved out of the defensive tackle to defensive end because he took more snaps in a certain position. So I'm getting into that to say, from a fantasy standpoint, your linebackers on defensively are going to be Bush and White. There may be some guys like Quinnen Williams, which are valuable.
Yeah, I was going to.
But as a defensive tackle, depending on the league that you're in, he may not be rife with points. It just may not be the case. Safeties like Jonathan Abram from Mississippi State, that could be a first rounder. There are a lot of second round safeties that are coming that will get drafted most likely. But again, that's a position that usually has a wealth of options. It's in my league, it's a 45 man roster league, and safety is really the only position that you can kind of pick at the waiver wire on. So, my long diatribe means that you may not see a lot of impactful offensive players in 2019 that'll be drafted in the first round on Thursday night.
Yeah, you got maybe
there might not be any running backs.
What do you think? Maybe like the three or four quarterbacks, and you're right. I mean, you might wait to the second round to see some running backs, and then late first round is when you're going to start to see the wide receivers go, right? It seems.
Yeah, I think so. And DK Metcalf could go a little bit early. You got guys like Marquise Brown coming off an injury, AJ Brown, DK Metcalf.
Are you getting the feeling that Metcalf is a little overrated? That, you know, we just looked at his, you know, Superman body I'm not calling
he
him
wasn't
a bust,
productive.
But I mean, yeah.
He wasn't productive.
Didn't do too well at the combine as well.
Yeah, I asked Joe Lisi. He was great at the combine. Metcalf was, but his production wasn't great. He only played seven games his last year at Ole Miss.
Wasn't there one
catches.
Specific thing that he didn't do well at, like running the cones or something like that? Like the agility.
The thought
part?
Process. Well, the thought process from him as a player is that one on one straight line routes, he'll beat everybody. But you start to wonder if he can run every route and if he can be productive at the next level. Because he wasn't productive at Ole Miss. 26 catches, followed up by 39 catches a year before. The defense was terrible. They weren't on the field enough. He had other players to contend with, like A.J. Brown, who's also a first-round pick. So he had some challenges there. But why not rise above if you're so physically talented? We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit more NFL, and then we'll do MLB as well in hour number three. It's Mike and Joe. We'll be right back. Whoa!